This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Alan Scott. This is the place where government actions come face-to-face with business decisions. Online at www.bgov.com. And of course, on the air, Thursdays at 11 and Fridays at 2:30 right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Hey, are you ready to potentially shuffle the deck? It could happen. With approximately 78 orders worth of total of about $4 billion, almost ready to expire on Millennia, Millennia Lite, Answer, and Commits Next Gen. They'll be expiring between now and June 2016, and follow-ups likely to hit Alliant or Alliant Small Business. BGov Federal Business Intelligence Analyst Brian Friel will be here to discuss the fallout shortly. But we're kicking off the program with a topic you really can't escape, especially if you have anything to do with a government entity. Of course, I'm talking about sequestration. White House tours are no more. Yellowstone National Park is now delaying its opening. I actually have a friend who was traveling to New York, back from New York over the weekend. And the line to show your ID and boarding pass at LaGuardia was the equivalent of multiple city blocks long. This is just to show your ID and boarding pass. The excuse he got when they got up front, the woman said, hey, budget cuts. Sorry, don't know what to tell you. So what's next? Well, in one area, senior budget analyst Cameron Luthley has some potential answers as he's released part two of the Civilian Discretionary Spending Under Scrutiny series. This one on the chopping block, $1.6 billion in cuts for labor, HHS, education, and he joins me now. Hey, Cameron.
Hi, nice to be here.
So going through these cuts and looking at what's potentially going to happen, obviously these aren't actual cuts, you're looking at the potential. Is it depressing?
I think, in a way, it's optimistic. Things don't change rapidly in Washington.
Right.
It's sort of this macro-level sense that we need to cut, but you really have to get down to the specifics. You have to look at the individual programs. And there's a growing consensus that we ought to cut some of the low-hanging fruit, the things that are less effective, that crosses party lines. And in this day and age, that's rare.
In your overview, the last sentence, even troubled programs may prove too popular to cut. That's a frightening statement.
And if you look at this particular, part two of the series,
right,
for programs in the Labor HHS Education Subcommittee of Congress, it's not surprising that some of these are popular programs, feel-good programs.
Right. And bipartisan feel-good or just feel-good in general?
Bipartisan.
Okay.
You know, there are critics. But the critics don't have enough votes. And if you can't count votes in this town, you're in trouble.
Good point.
And particularly in the Senate. The other problem is, of course, appropriations bills come through as a package. Mm-hmm. It's hard to strip out individual programs once it's moved to the floor.
Done purposely, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There are only 12 subcommittees to cover all the discretionary spending, and one of them's for Congress itself, the ledge branch. So that one doesn't really count. They're not going to cut themselves, or not usually.
Right.
But if you look at these programs, only a few of them I would rate as likely to be cut.
I noticed that. And as we go through, and that's a good point now to bring up the rating system. You've got likely to be cut, medium, and then low.
Right. High, medium, low. And there aren't a lot of high and medium at this point in time. However, I think for people who are interested in government efficiency, who are interested in this from a contractual standpoint, there are vendors with stakeholders or grantees, don't count your chickens. They haven't hatched yet.
Right.
Just because these cuts aren't likely this year doesn't mean that they don't get put on the chopping block for next year.
Yeah, we've still got fiscal 2014 to talk about.
Exactly.
And we're going to get into that next week. But for this week, let's talk about some of the programs that you've mentioned here as we dive through the subcommittee. Let's take a look at the subcommittee list for starters.
Sure.
So walk us through what you've got going on.
So the one thing that really stands out for this subcommittee, mm-hmm. OMB's list of cuts, which is my starting point, almost all of them are grant programs. There is a huge disconnect.
Talk about low-hanging fruit. Come on.
Right. GAO has pointed out in numerous analyses that there's overlap between programs across government agencies and even within government agencies like HHS that are attempting to do good things, to help people escape poverty, to clean up the environment or what have you. Well, HHS has a lot of grant programs. So if you go through the list, you've got things like hospital preparedness programs, centers for public health preparedness, to help them respond to like pandemic flu and things like that. And so that's a laudable goal. But OMB's perspective is they've sort of done their job and it's time to get out of helping the locals and let them help themselves.
How can the powers that be determine that these are potentially the ones that could go away when they do such good?
Well, because
when a bad one sticks around just because
right,
it's popular.
Right. But the trick is just because it has a good goal doesn't mean it's effective. And so
look at Harp and Harm.
And doesn't mean it's not duplicative of a similar program elsewhere. So you have to look at the individual program and the specifics.
Okay. There's one that I found, and I'm scrolling through the study now. I wish I had highlighted it. There was one that had to do with energy efficiency.
Low-income home energy assistance program has been around for years.
Right.
And people have been recommending it be cut going all the way back to the first Bush administration.
Right.
Including the Clinton administration and the last administration and this administration. They've all suggested it should be cut. Now, I think the analytical perspective from OMB is a little more helpful this time around because they're basically saying the low-income homeowners or the low-income families who need this help mm-hmm. are mostly those with oil heat, which is the most volatile from a price standpoint. Gas is cheap right now, right? So, and not that many people have electric heat, except out in the Pacific Northwest. A lot of dams, right?
Good point.
Right? So the administration perspective is we could cut this back and focus just on those who really need it, those that have oil heat, where the prices are more volatile and high, and they, you know, we don't want people to be cold during the winter.
Right.
Right? So, and then they said we'll have an additional couple hundred million dollars as a backup in case things get really bad, the weather's really bad, or oil prices go through the roof, or what have you. Well, Congress rejected the cuts in the House and the Senate last year. It's got too much popularity in too many states, in the Northeast in particular, and the Upper Midwest. They don't have the votes.
Are these political posturing moves where they say, you know what, I'm for the people. I can't vote for this.
It depends on the individual member. I don't want to be totally cynical about this. I mean, so
well, let me be cynical.
You can be cynical, and I'll be the Pollyanna or
right,
whatever.
Fine.
Everything's fine. There are. I think the pressures on members of the House where they have to run every 2 years is pretty intense. And from a fundraising standpoint, from a getting home to your district standpoint, holding town halls and all of that, they'd be more likely to hear about it. It's a little easier for the senators, but in fact, they're some of the senators from places like Vermont. The proposal isn't to get rid of it entirely. It's
understood.
Just narrow
it's
the focus and
understood.
Save some money for the taxpayers.
Understood. It makes sense.
Doesn't have the votes.
Here's another one that kind of shocks me. The Administration for Children and Families provides grants to states, territories, and Indian tribes to pass funds to community action agencies that work to reduce poverty.
There are so many other programs that do the same thing.
Okay.
It's duplicative.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So, and that's the case with a lot of these.
That's a fiscal year savings of $329 million, potentially 48% reduction. That's a lot of money. Nothing to shake a stick at.
Well,
and obviously a duplicitous program should be at least reexamined.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, a theme that runs throughout this study. It's not that the goals aren't laudable goals. It's that either the program doesn't work well.
Right.
Or there are other ways to achieve the same goal, other programs.
You're listening to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're speaking with Cameron Luthy. He's a senior budget analyst with Bloomberg Government who's penned a study on the chopping block, $1.6 billion in cuts for labor, HHS, and education. Let's talk about education. Are we talking duplicitous issues here as well, or are we talking actual programs that are actually doing good that may potentially be gotten rid of?
Well, the one education program that I highlighted is an interesting one. It's called Impact Aid Payments for Federal Property, right? The goal of the program is if the federal government buys or owns property in a school district, that means it's not on the tax rolls.
Okay.
So the idea was to compensate the local school districts for the loss of revenue. Seems sensible. Over time, however, this program has been in place for decades.
Right.
There have been a lot of changes in these communities. In some cases, the federal government still owns the property, but there's not much going on there.
Right.
In some cases, in the past, there was a federal presence there that it had a lot of families with kids, so it added to the burden for the local school district. That no longer exists, so that changes the dynamic. In other cases, local school districts have merged over time. There is a move that's been going on for decades in this country of consolidation of school districts to provide better service, make the high schools bigger, more choices for the kids, you know, all of those kinds of things, and particularly because of the baby bust that occurred in the 70s and 80s, where you had fewer kids, consolidate school districts. So what happened is you had a school district that was eligible for this aid merged with a bigger school district that wasn't. They're still getting the aid. It's sort of like they've been grandfathered in. So OMB would just whack this program.
So what do we have to look for next?
Well, there are two things that are happening right now, this week.
Okay.
The first thing is that the Senate is taking up a full-year appropriations bill for FY13, the year in which these cuts were proposed by OMB. So they're moving the ball forward. The House passed the bill on the 6th of March. Now it's the Senate's turn to act. They're running into some problems. The bill has full-year line-by-line appropriations for DOD and VA. Everybody else, just a formula, last year's level plus or minus. The Senate Chairman of the Appropriations Committee, Barbara Mikulski from Maryland, wants to add line-by-line details for agriculture, homeland security, commerce, justice, and some science programs, NASA included. When you put in the line-by-line detail, it reveals programs that people might want to cut. So guess who came up on the net yesterday? Senator McCain and Senator Tom Coburn from Oklahoma, who annually puts out his own list of things to whack.
Right.
And they have pointed out some of the things in this package they would like to cut.
Wonderful.
And that gets really hard when you move something onto the floor. Right, you got to have enough votes in the Senate. It takes 60 votes to go to the bathroom. So we'll see what happens. But right now, there's a hold on the bill. So we'll have to wait and see this week what happens with that. The other thing that's going on right now is the federal agencies are implementing sequester. As you mentioned in your lead, that's the topic du jour.
Starting to
happen. Well, for some civilian agencies, we're not sure which ones, there may be some flexibility. So maybe Congress didn't cut a program, but the agencies will do so under the aegis of sequester. You know, if they have flexibility to pick winners and losers and they propose this program get a whack and it's just funded under a CR formula, go for it. Just make sure you tell your ledge affairs guys because if there's a member of Congress who likes this program, you might want to give them a heads up you're going to whack it.
That was not Alan Scott that said that, although, hey.
Well, look, when I worked in the federal government, I always was telling people, talk to ledge affairs.
Right.
Don't leave Congress in the dark. Don't blindside them. Don't you'll be sorry.
Right.
You'll pay for it, one way or the other. I was on the Hill one time when they were mad at the State Department for not keeping them in the loop. They eliminated the budget for Ledge Affairs.
Obviously, you're not needed. They're not consulting.
They put it back later after they came up and groveled.
Oh, my gosh. The stories this man can tell. His name is Cameron Luthy, senior budget analyst with Bloomberg Government. On the chopping block, $1.6 billion in cuts for labor, HHS, and education. Part two of a nine-part series. The ball's just going to continue rolling. Can you give us a preview of what the next one's going to be about?
I'm probably going to do Interior and Environment Subcommittee.
Okay.
And given the timing, this series may sort of roll into a look at the list that comes out of OMB for FY14.
Nice. How fortuitous.
Which could be in early April. So we'll wait to see what OMB produces, and then that'll shape the future series.
Very nice. We'll definitely be talking about fiscal 2014 because the landscape has changed, so to speak.
Hold on. It's going to be a bumpy ride, Alan.
This is very true. You're listening to Capital Impact on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Cameron, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
So we're going to make a rather abrupt U-turn as we move from money potentially on the sequester block to expiring contracts that may spawn $4 billion in tech service orders to Alliant.
With all the details is BGov's federal business intelligence analyst, Mr. Brian Friel. Hey, Brian.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing well. So this is an anagram soup that you've written here, but it all makes sense because all of these anagrams represent money and lots of potential money. But in this case, we're talking about orders making their way over to Alliant. Explain for those who may not understand, what is Alliant?
Alliant is a government-wide acquisition contract, mm-hmm. and that's a GWAC, and you hear that phrase all the time in government contracting circles. And a GWAC is a technology services or technology products contract that any agency can use to order. So in Alliant's case, agencies like the State Department are ordering enterprise information systems architecture work, or another agency might, Homeland Security, as a company manages its classified networks through a task order on Alliant. So Alliant is the third generation of GWACs. GWACs were first created in 1996.
Right.
And Alliant is replacing a set of GWACs, including ones called Millennia and Millennia Lite. And there were also two called Answer and Commits Next Gen. And I could tell you what those stand for, but I think it would make you...
No, we're good. You know, and I apologize for those who are listening going, I know all of this. But you know what? There may be someone out there who is listening to the program, new to the program, may not fully understand. And we want to get them up to speed before we really dive in to what we're talking about. And what we're talking about is an awful lot of money over the next few years making their way to this GWAC.
Right. Those old GWACs, agencies can't place orders on them anymore, but they can place orders on Alliant. So as those orders on the old GWACs expire, the likely place for them to move is Alliant. And there's $4 billion in orders left on those contracts, and that expire over the next 3 years.
Starting now.
In March of this year, going through 2016. And as they expire, the natural place for them to be recompeted is on Alliant. And there are two Alliants. There's Alliant Alliant, which is large businesses, and there's Alliant Small Business, which is obviously small businesses.
Sure.
And it's kind of the sidekick. Alliant, the main Alliant, can host $50 billion in orders through 2019. Alliant Small Business can host $15 billion in orders over the next 5 years, and about a fifth of all orders in the program overall. So agencies have a choice. They can either place the recompete the orders on Alliant or Alliant Small Business, depending on whether they think a small business can meet the requirements or if they think they need to go to the bigger players to fill the orders.
So this is potentially a problem. I'm talking specifically about SAIC and Booz Allen Hamilton. A lot of these companies have a lot of money that's going away very soon.
Yeah, the expiring orders create exposure for companies.
Sure.
And so they have to play defense and fend off their competitors. And there are a lot more competitors on the Alliant contracts. There's more than 100 companies on these contracts. There were about half that on the predecessor contracts. So there are more potential competitors. In general, you're facing three and a third bidders is the average,
right,
on orders on Alliant, which is up from the previous contract. And agencies are tending to split up the orders compared to what they have on the predecessor contracts, splitting them up into smaller chunks, which means that that a expiring order on Millennia may spawn two or three follow-on orders, and again, the incumbent contractor would have to play defense on all of those.
Right. So the money that they had gotten out of that one all-encompassing contract is now broken up into multiple pieces, and they've got to fight for all of them, three times the amount of work,
right,
that they have to do to get it.
And some companies have been holding their own, so we did an analysis looking at the companies that are on Alliant and how they fared compared to the predecessor contracts. And SAIC was the number one contractor on the expired contracts, and they're the number one contractor on Alliant. They've increased their share. Booz Allen Hamilton has increased its share. There are nine companies overall that have actually been able to increase their share compared to the previous contracts. But there are 63 companies that weren't on the previous contracts that have won money on Alliant. So
sure,
it's expanding that pool, and more money is likely to move onto Alliant. So there's a bit of a rising tide lift all boats aspect to Alliant, because a lot of work is coming onto the contract, not just from those expired GWACs, but from other contracts. Agencies see Alliant as a way of consolidating the work and getting cost savings by not having to do full contract competitions. They can just use the Alliant contract, which has already pre-selected the companies. They can issue a task order very quickly in a few weeks to a few months, depending on how complex it is. And it saves them the hassle of doing it all on their own.
If you had to speculate, and I realize this is pure speculation at this point, we're talking about $4.1 billion making their way over to Alliant, potentially. And I say potentially because of the sequester. What percentage of that money do you think will be sequestered, if any?
Well, what's likely to happen is with new contracts, it wouldn't necessarily be the effect of the sequester would be that the agency would potentially reduce its requirements. So instead of asking for sort of high-end services, mm-hmm. they go down a level and they say, instead of, say, 24-hour support, we're going to go to, you know, support 5 days a week during business hours, that kind of reduction in the requirement.
Okay.
So that way the follow-on order is worth less money over time, and the agency then can bank those savings toward its sequesterable total.
Makes sense. Task orders expired, GWACs by agency. We're talking a lot in the defense area alone. The number one out of the grouping. Commerce is in there. NASA with $43 million in expired. I'm a little surprised by that.
But, you know, almost every cabinet department and major agency uses Alliant to some extent. Some don't. So, for example, the Transportation Department and the Agency for International Development haven't been users.
Right.
And so if you're a companies seeking work on Alliant, your best bet is to target the agencies that are already using the contract. So the Defense Department has more than $2 billion in expiring orders on the old contracts, and because they are already using Alliant a lot, they're likely to use it for the follow-on. And in fact, the Defense Department and the Navy have both issued policies to their acquisition officials saying, please use these government-wide acquisition contracts like Alliant and Alliant Small Business because we think that we can achieve cost savings by using them rather than producing our own contract.
We're speaking with Brian Friel. He's a federal business intelligence analyst with BGov on BGov's Capital Impact right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Expiring contracts may spawn $4 billion in tech services orders on Alliant. What advice do you have for those out there rebidding?
Well, one thing to keep in mind is that if you're not on Alliant now as a prime contractor, you can't get on. The contracts, both Alliant and Alliant Small Business, run through 2019. So if you're not on the contracts right now, you would have to go, and you wanted to get some of the business on it, you would have to go in as a subcontractor to one of the primes. So companies that are not currently on the contract can look at BGov's report and look at the performance of the existing primes to see who's winning business in which agencies for which kind of work. And that can help those subcontractors figure out who is the best partner for them to prime with. For companies that are currently on the contract, a great thing to do is look at the expiring orders. We've produced a list of the 78 orders that are expiring over the next 3 years from the previous contract. Look at who the incumbents are, who the buying agency is. Is that buying agency using Alliant, or have they been shifting their work to other contracts? Is the incumbent doing well on Alliant, or are they? Do they appear to be struggling, and might there be an opportunity for unseating the incumbent? So that kind of analysis can really help a company steer its business development and bid and proposal dollars to where they could best be used.
Words of advice from Mr. Brian Friel. Brian, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me on.
If you want to find out more about, well, everything we just spoke of, it's real simple, especially navigating those contractual waters, determining the solutions to what Brian just mentioned. BGov.com is the place to go. You can follow us on Twitter at BGov. Follow me at Alan L. Scott, and I will catch you again next Thursday at 11. With plenty more to say about the business impact of government actions. For BGov's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, I'm Alan Scott.